You, yes, you, are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 27. This episode, the coloring is on the walls.
To another day at the Green Lantern Corecast. We'll be bringing you the latest in Green Lantern related news, rumors, and reviews on all things you need to know on your first day ring slinging. I'm your intergalactic host, Frankie Mateo. Today, we give you our thoughts on the latest trailer of the Green Lantern movie from WonderCon, as well as our reviews for the soon to be concluded story of Bright as Day number 23, as well as our continuing coverage of the War of the Green Lanterns in part 3 of Emerald Wars number 8. As always, joining me today is my carefully assembled honor guard correspondents, Kuhan, Carlton, P. Bing, Eric the Gray, and Brandon West. How are you guys doing today?
Hey.
What's up?
I'm doing quite well, my Eric friend.
He meant to say gay.
Yeah, as in relating news, two new miniseries have been announced with the Aftermath header, Brightest Day Aftermath, The Search for the Swamp Thing, being done by Jonathan Rankin and drawn by Marco Castillo. The search begins in June. Also, The War of the Green Lanterns, The Aftermath, will be hitting stores in July and is being done by Tony Bedard and drawn by Miguel Sepúlveda.
Yes.
Stay tuned for both of those things coming in the near future. What can we say? Hearing Tony Bedard is going to be continuing his story work even into War of the Green Lanterns, The Aftermath, is consistent, I believe, in terms of continuity-wise.
I guess it needs its special a little bit more, a tiny bit more essential. Though, normally I'd say, obviously one of the big guys is writing it, so it's going to have a little bit of information that, you would get normally in the titles. But in all fairness, he's the third tier writer, and he's padded the stories out like crazy. There's no reason to assume this won't be just something else that's padded, title?
We're gonna read it anyway, so whatever.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean,
it's only two issues, so.
Right, it's only going to be a two-part miniseries.
And then that's $6? You guys just throw $6 in the sewer?
Normally we throw $6 for many less things, such as,
Black as Night Catwoman.
Black as Night Catwoman.
I just read that in the store and threw it. I actually threw that copy that I read away in the store. And the guy thanked me next week. He was like, there was locusts and a plague of mummies attacking my store, and I think it was a cursed comic book.
I didn't even know it existed. I did not buy that. I'm so glad.
I was actually going to buy that collection from, because I liked a couple of the issues. I was going to buy that collection from Borders, and it was literally 75% off, and I had it in my hand, and I looked in the back, and it said, I literally threw it across the store. This is a mess, but I threw it across the store. I think I hit somebody.
Right to the children's section.
I think I hit somebody.
Smacked a small child in the face with a copy of Catwoman Black as Night.
I hucked a hardcover containing it at her, so hopefully, I believe it was a female as well, so.
You hit a little girl in the face with the comic.
I hope
that's
so.
That's terrible news.
I hope so. I'm not sure that I did. Don't quote me on it, but you can quote me on that. I hope so. I'm interested in reading The Aftermath just because more Green Lantern means more story, I guess, just because of that. But, what are you going to do? I'd rather have it be written by Tomasi or something like that because I kind of like his Aftermath better than anybody else's. But and Bedard kind of pads this stuff out. But, I'm whatever. It's kind of expected. And we really did get off pretty easily for this crossover. We really just need to read the titles we're already reading. We don't need to buy specials as we normally could buy them, or we're normally forced to buy them, So we're lucky that Flash had that heat this year.
Technically, we're in these specials in the same realm as we get annuals for other books. I mean, Green Lantern barely even has an annual.
Maybe we should get some annuals. I want some annuals.
I mean, I would love some annuals, but Green Lantern barely gets any annuals. Same goes for Flash books or anything that isn't in the Batman family or the Superman family.
We'll get
what we get, and basically, why complain about it? We're getting an extra Green Lantern book coming out in a couple of months, you know, as maybe a two-part mini, but at least an extra Green Lantern book, just the same way as we went from having Green Lantern Corps to Green Lantern and Warriors.
I mean, the fact that it's big enough to get one of these aftermath things, like, that hasn't gone with many things that weren't company-wide crossovers and, you know, whatever.
Yes, I mean, we're getting fairly light, but I'm still not going to thank them for it, you know?
No, you don't have to thank them for it, Eric. Trust me, we won't make you thank anybody for anything.
Trust, you don't need to thank them. Just shill out the $3.
Just give them the money. They don't need to thank you. They just want your money.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you for only slightly sodomizing me this time.
What about the other spinoff? I mean, everybody kind of knew that Brightest Day was just leading.
Well, Brightest Day Aftermath, the Search for Swamp Thing, we still don't know if we're going to completely cover the issues themselves. I mean, yes, we've covered all of Brightest Day up to this point.
Yeah.
But basically, ever since having just the White Lantern be the only thing involved in this issue, ever since, after three issues into the book, we've lost all Green Lanterns, Sinestro Corps members, or anything of that nature in the book, and just been left alone with the tier characters that were brought back since Blackest Night.
It's true.
We'll see what happens. We'll pick up the first issues of Aftermath. If we feel that we'll continue covering the story, we'll go for it. I mean, the White Lantern symbol is still embossed on the cover, it seems, so it's still tied into
it's like lower opacity. Like it's kind of there, guys.
It might just end up being that the character that is featured on the cover that is not yet revealed, it will be a White Lantern or the White Lantern. So he actually might be a Lantern, which will require us to read it, I suppose. But
seriously, how long is the Aftermath?
I think they said it was three. Yep.
About three-part miniseries.
I don't know if it requires.
So this is mostly the two issues that they pulled out of Brightest Day.
Yeah, probably.
I don't think so. Because it's a different writer. I think it's just a way of cashing in on what they're not sure what they're going to do next. Spreading it out.
I don't know if it'll. What was I going to say? Yeah, I don't know if it'll force us to read it, but it'll force us to cover it for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we all kind of knew that Brightest Day was leading into, like, another series, because that's what Blackest Night did, and that's what Sinestro Corps War did, and that's what New Guardians has done. I mean, so we know they're all leading into another story as opposed to stopping and having any kind of narrative cohesion, but it is a little disenchanting. I mean, this seems more like, I think we said this was going to happen last week, too. I was talking about the Aftermath issues of 52 and how those were completely pointless stuff. So, yeah, it's disappointing to say the least, I guess, but what are you going to do? Not interested in reading it at all. Not at all.
Well, again, we'll see where the road lies when the issues come out, down the road till then, we're not making assumptions as to the fact that we may be bringing up the book and, adding it to our review list. But till then, both those Aftermath issues are coming out. They both pertain in a way of Green Lantern related material, so, and again, we're your biggest news and reviews of Green Lantern source material, so you may be hearing it from us. Pretty much, and coming out of WonderCon is the trailer, the new release trailer of Green Lantern movie, which, seems to have a lot more alien activity in it than it did when the first trailer came out. This trailer actually features more of the core than the original trailer had. We see more of Kilowog, we see more of Salik, more of, Tomar Rae. We even hear Tomar Rae talk. All of stuff, constructs being done, maskless, Hal Jordan or Ryan Reynolds, whichever you want, take your pick. It seems to have more action packed. We even see a giant Chrona Parallax, as it no longer needs to be a secret. It's been leaked all over the internet. Shown in the movie, shown in the trailer. And to be funny, I can honestly say this trailer seems to be more of the script that we read last year, in my opinion.
There's a few shots in there that we see. I mean, Hector putting on a ring and, Corona or the Parallax entity eating Hector and stuff. I mean, we do get some implication that the script we reviewed on the show is definitely still kind of the template they're using. Hopefully structurally altered, but I mean, I guess that was kind of a guarantee. I think it should be clarified. It wasn't exactly a trailer. I mean, this was just
they showed 11 minutes. This was really though a long form trailer. What we saw,
it should have been. But the producers and the DC guys kept stressing this is not a trailer. Do not think it's a trailer. It is just footage. We weren't going to release it, but then, obviously they needed to, because the week before they released a press release said, we're not going to really advertise this movie at all until May. And everybody's like, are you out of your mind? So, but,
It's not really a trailer except for showing it to other people to get them to want to watch your movie.
It's really a long form trailer, despite what they say.
It should have been a trailer. There's no reason it can't be. Why can't you just add a couple of titles and dissolve and we would have had a trailer, you know what I mean? But whatever.
It was cool looking.
I think it looked awesome. I think,
the main reason why it was brought out was to, again, hype up the already existing Green Lantern fan.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the original trailer, again, portrayed more of, Ryan Reynolds as a snarky comedic type, which, you know, pertained more to Ryan Reynolds fans, who said, what's his new movie gonna be like? And, you know, we see flying wisecracks and shirtless, Ryan Reynolds. While the new movie pretty much features more of Hal Jordan embarking on his journey to become a Green Lantern, and again, showing us more things fans want to see. Alien beings, constructs, things of that nature.
Yes.
Yeah. It also, like I said, let me just read it real quick that the production company had said that they've not been advertising this movie very much because they just basically wasn't done. And, this is literally everything they have done, so that's why they showed the solid 11 minutes at WonderCon, and that was kind of a big deal early in the week. They'd been asking Mark Strong and Ryan Reynolds, what's the deal? Why isn't there advertising? They were all kind of saying, you'll see more in June, you'll see more in May, and everybody was kind of like, well, how can you, it's your biggest movie of the summer and you're not advertising it at all. Like, I mean, doing it a month before is practically not advertising at all, so this is kind of a big deal for them, but I think it really did, it turned me around in the movie. I know it turned a lot of other people around in the movie. I mean, they still had one insanely lame joke smack dab in the middle of it, but otherwise it looks pretty cool. But I mean, can the movie really maintain this much, like, you know, action and just the amount of money on screen? You know, I mean, I still think we're getting a lot of boring scenes of Hal and, what's her name, Blake Lively, trying to act her way through scenes, et cetera, you know?
You can't enjoy a little bit of a character scene without powers and vibes?
No, listen, is that what I said? I was saying that I just happen to think that the movie, we've not really seen enough of the movie to really judge it yet. You know, we saw a trailer with a couple of scenes that were funny-ish, and then we saw a big action sequences and stuff, which, of course, are going to look awesome, but I mean, you know, is that really going to, I mean, we haven't really gotten a good sense of the movie yet.
So it's too early to call, you basically say.
I guess so. I mean, there is a scuttlebutt that they said only about 25% of the movie takes place on Oa, and we saw pretty much, like, if we're seeing 4 minutes of Oa, and at WonderCon they saw about 11 minutes of Oa, they've pretty much seen all of Oa, right? You know, I mean, what else can you see, you know?
What do you think, Bing?
I think I was a lot more excited by the footage that just recently came out than I was with the initial one. I am still a little bit leery about the CGI only because it still looks really, really, really CG to me. And admittedly, you know, I kind of hold everything up these days to, where the wild things are as far as merging CG and like live action at the same time. So I'm kind of hoping there'll be a little, we'll take some of the shine off of the CG because I think it looks so fantastic. But again, you know, I'm seeing it on a little tiny screen. You know, most of the stuff I watch, when I'm surfing the web is on a netbook, which, you know, doesn't really do much of anything justice. So I'm hoping, you know, on the big screen, it's going to look great. I'm assuming the really kind of lame joke that Eric was talking about was him mussing his way through the oath.
Yeah.
Which I have to admit, I really found endearing. It could just be that Ryan Reynolds won my heart at Comic-Con last year, and really, I would listen to the man do just about anything at this point. But I really like that, especially as someone who heard the oath for the first time in a room full of Green Lantern, you know, nerds at the New York Comic-Con when First Flight came out. And I had never heard the Green Lantern oath before, so I kind of liked that. I don't know, it's kind of strange to say, it resonated with me a little bit. Aside from that, I thought it looked great. I'm so excited for all the nerdy things coming out this summer.
I mean, for the CG stuff, I thought most of it was okay. I'm still a little bothered by the mask, obviously. That's the thing that's you know, it is a little
late Batman. Like, well,
I think the problem is that the mask is also CG, along with the rest of the costume, whereas we're used to seeing something that's more of a Domino mask, which is more something that he could put on himself as opposed to something that looks kind of not right.
If it is CG, which I wasn't aware it was, I thought it looked like makeup. I was watching it on a netbook, but something that just occurred to me is that if it is CG, they gave him a green screen mask to give him a Green Lantern mask.
I think they would have actually just, like, colored in his face. If it's makeup, well,
it's funny. Yeah, that's funny too. That kind of weird thing they ignore in all the Batman movies and stuff is that Batman has to have an insane amount of makeup around his eyes to make the mask look right, you know. And even in Dark Knight and Batman Begins, when he takes off his mask after he's had the Batman mask on, he doesn't have the insane amount of eyeshadow. You know, it's kind of something they reference in Kick-Ass when Big Daddy's putting his makeup on in the mirror. That's what they're doing. He's putting a bunch of black makeup around his eyes to kind of make the mask not look as silly. And they put green makeup around his eyes digitally, which I think is kind of funny, but, yeah. I don't know how I feel about it. It kind of makes, I think it's trying to mask it as more of a real world type mask thing and make it look better, but it kind of draws it out as fake to me. I just think it doesn't look right on his face. It looks like it's not moving around enough on his face.
Yeah. Well, again, it's a CG mask, for the level of technology that they have just to make that statement work is, you know, amazing. Yeah. The fact that it does alter his face just enough that you could pretty much go like, huh, he doesn't look as much as Ryan Reynolds with the mask on sometimes. Like, you know, I mean, you can see, clearly tell it's him, but at least it gives him a way of hiding his identity better in the movie.
It's a nice Superman Clark Kent effect.
Yeah. Well, again, aside from that, it's good. I mean, it goes with the rest of the costume. I mean, having a real mask on top of him while wearing the rest of the costume probably would have thrown many things off. But it is more noticeable when he's around everything else at CG.
Yeah.
Like, just having him in the center of every other Green Lantern in that part of the trailer, stands him out more.
Because the only thing that's real in that scene is his head.
Right.
Well, I think Frankie's right that it does help. It's kind of like the Star Wars prequels where everybody was like, oh, it looks really fake. Why is everything on a green screen? Well, because it wouldn't, the amount of special effects they put in that movie, it would be, you have to kind of make everything look really fakeish, you know, to make it remotely decipherable. I mean, or the realistic stuff would be really decipherable. So I think Frankie's right, the fact that he's wearing the CG costume and CG mask is actually helping mask him better with all the Owen stuff.
Yeah, no, it's
right.
I agree.
But you know who I failed to hear his opinion on this from? Brandon?
No, I think I liked it, but I wasn't overly impressed.
Wait, you believe you liked it? Or?
Yeah.
I may not have liked it. I'm not really sure.
It's all right.
It's like a magic.
I mean, there were parts of it I liked the gun, the Gatling gun, the end where he blows the giant beam in the air. That was cool, but I wasn't hating the first trailer, so this didn't like super excite me like any other thing. I was saying online the other day at the GreenLanternCorps.com forum that Green Lantern needs to be more comedic. Like, in order for it to be successful, it needs to have that Ryan Reynolds charm. And frankly, personally, that's what I'm looking for at this point.
Or that Ryan Reynolds basically naked throughout the whole movie.
I think that's happened once, and people bring that up.
I'm going to cut in that if I saw someone wearing that outfit with Ryan Reynolds' build walking around, the fact that he's only got a little domino mask on concealing who he was, I wouldn't be looking at his face anyway. So it really is a nice, it's like a Black Canary-esque kind of disguise. I like it.
Yeah, exactly.
I just think that if we got a little bit more of that humor, I mean, the Lantern thing was nice. I kind of wish they would have kept that because I probably would have laughed harder in the theater had I not seen that coming. But, I just want to see some more humor. Like, we didn't get any Carol Ferris scenes in this. We didn't.
Thank God. I mean,
no. Yeah. Well, I just don't know. Yeah. Okay. Push off the break. Okay. Okay. We didn't get any Tom scenes in this. We didn't get, like, any character scenes in this, and it was all just bam, here's Oa, bam, here's Sinestro.
Well, I think that's what they were doing. They were showing the Oa stuff, so that's the point.
Yeah, but that's the point for the WonderCon and the CinemaCon viewers.
That's why it wasn't a trailer. Not a trailer, because it is nothing but action and nothing but special effects.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why I wasn't like overly impressed with it, because like when the trailer comes with Thor in May and it doesn't have any Ryan Reynolds classic moments, I'm going to be disappointed. I mean, because this is a Ryan Reynolds movie now, and that's what I'm looking forward to, because as of this point, I feel like this movie could be, like, unlike any other superhero movie ever, but without that Ryan Reynolds charm and, wit and hilarity, it'll just be a giant bunch of CG clustered into nothing.
No, that's true. If it's not funny, that's why, I mean, yeah, if it's not funny, that's why it's not going to be any good. But I think it was, at least for me, getting excited.
Wait, Eric, did you say because it's not funny, it's not going to be any good?
No, if it isn't funny, it's not going to be any good. I mean,
All right. I understand what you're saying. I understand both of your points. If the movie doesn't adhere to most of...
I said it's got to have heart.
It has to have the cinema heart inside of it. It has to endear to both the public as well as to the fans. Now,
fans even care. I mean, everybody always says the fans. I don't even understand what this fans.
But that's the way most directors, most writers, most producers.
Yeah, it just think about like Scott Pilgrim. Scott Pilgrim, you know, the whole San Diego Comic Con. Like Scott Pilgrim owned the whole con, and then made no money. I mean, it's. What has pandered to the fans gotten anybody? I mean,
that movie pandered more to the fans rather than to the public.
That's what I'm saying. That's why, I mean, what is it, what difference does it make? I mean, if they have Tomar Ray in there, if they just invented a brand new character and had to do what Tomar Ray does, yeah, I might get pissed. Frankie might get pissed, but, you know, my girlfriend's not going to care. She's going to be like, that character was funny. I don't care that it wasn't Tomar Ray. I mean, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where I mean, I can bring up the example of Smallville all the time. Smallville's like the most, you know, successful adaption of any DC property of all time, and it's nothing like the comics, you know, but it's got like 15 million people watching it every week, you know, 10 times 10 how many people read the comics, you know, so the comics should be doing more to be like the movies. I mean, and everybody thinks that's blasphemous, but, you know, get over it, you know, I mean, like, it's not, who cares if, you know, who cares if they say,
but that's, I don't think that matters though. Even if the comic is exactly like the movie stuff, it's not gonna bring more readers to the comics.
That's what I mean. What's the point of pandering to fans at all? Exactly. It's a completely different product.
No, but again, the main reason to pander to the fans at all is because they don't want to crush the base that, you know, found them in the first place.
I mean, see, something like Smallville is different than something like the Green Lantern movie. Especially in a scenario where, with characters and character motivations. Where in Smallville, it's a reimagining of everything, as opposed to the movie is like Green Lantern movie or a Superman movie. It's supposed to be, you're supposed to see the Superman that you see in comics on the screen. It can be a slightly different story, as long as it's got the same character motivations, where Smallville is, you know, this is him in high school and everybody knows everything now, and, you know, but
the argument, the whole conceit of Smallville and defeat of half the plots of the show is that you know how it's all going to end up and stuff. And bring up the Superman movies. Superman movies are nothing like the comics. You can't find a single Superman comic that's remotely like the movies. Even Superman Returns, when it came out, was based like 100% on the original Superman movies, you know, 35 years before. So you never had to read a Superman comic in your life, and you could watch Superman Returns, you know. So what are the jokes in that? They have Jimmy Olsen, they have, you know, Perry White, that's it. I mean, that's all stuff that's from the other interpretations anyway. I mean, you know, Jimmy Olsen created by the radio show, all that stuff, you know. So it's, I don't know, it's just, for me, it's like, what's the point of pandering? I mean, it's. I think if you have the property and you're making a Green Lantern movie, you might as well make 70 characters.
I think if pandering doesn't hurt, then why not do it? Like, if you put Tomar Ray in, if posing another character, and if it wouldn't make a difference, then why not just put Tomar Ray in?
But wouldn't it?
Wait, one at a time.
Let me finish what I was saying really, really quick.
Yeah, but being a rebuttal against.
That wasn't my final point, though.
I understand what you're
saying.
Here's the problem with the Superman example, though, is everyone knows Superman. You don't need to know about comic books to know Superman. People who don't live in America and have never seen an American comic book know who Superman is. So Smallville works because it Superman is so mainstream, he doesn't even have any nerd cred anymore. I mean, he's Superman. He's an icon. He's a building. You're gonna get something. I mean, you can talk about fan service, and we can talk about, say, Watchmen, which I know is horrible to say, or 300. Those were almost frame by frame adaptations of their source material. And there was no life to them. There was no story being told, so they sucked. Think of the first two Harry Potter movies. The exact same thing. They were almost like scene for scene the books, and the only good one is the third one, and that's because the director went, well, I have these worlds, I have these themes, and I have these characters, and I can do something with them. And as long as the Green Lantern movie has the themes and has the characters and has a story to tell, yeah, it doesn't have to be 100% fan service. It doesn't have to placate. But I don't know.
But isn't that exactly what I'm saying?
And I'm actually agreeing with what you're saying.
He's
also come to the opinion that basically, in a way, to crush the fans' perspective of seeing the movie, it sort of takes away a little bit of the heart of the movie as well.
No, I think here's my deal. I think it just, if you make a Green Lantern movie and you have to have the Green Lantern Corps, you should, because that's half the fun of it. You know, you might as well populate it with characters from the comics. There's no reason not to. I mean, why not have Bizd in there? Why not have, if you have a character looks kind of like Stell, call it Stell. Why not? And I mean, the idea of being like, in general, the idea of pandering to the base and being like, oh, we're trying to keep the fans happy. It's like, if everybody who reads the Green Lantern comic doesn't go see the movie, you're still going to have a hit. You know what I mean? Like, if you get the audience you're looking for, and the audience you're looking for are the people that go see the summer movies. You know what I mean? Like, Thor is not at all a comic that sells really well, and the movie isn't even really pandering to the comic at all. I mean, and the same thing with Captain America. Captain America, the movie, I mean, not to be like whatever, Iron Man, same thing. Iron Man was almost nothing like the comics, you know, and it didn't matter because it found what was interesting about the property and it went there, you know. So it's just one of those things where, like, Scott Pilgrim is a very sad example. Watchmen's a good example, too, because the opinion of that movie is split. People loved it, people hated it. Critics loved it, critics hated it, but everybody agreed that it was overblown, too long, too much reference to the source material. There's no reason to have those ridiculous things happening in the movie, you know, when you don't need them, and that's what it's all about. I mean, why was that movie so expensive? What killed it? Because it was so fidelis to the source material, you know? So,
okay, I can understand what the point is that you're coming across, but it's, again, a little bit too early to admit that Green Lantern may be too much.
No, I wasn't saying that. I'm sorry. I have no idea.
I understand what you're saying. Your point is that why panic to the fans at all, instead of just making it more a movie that has the building blocks of the source material, but make it their own way, but still having a heart to, basically make it more enjoyable for the summer goer movie.
Well, like, exactly. See, like, think of the argument, like, not, and now, we've rambled about this, I guess, a lot, but I've said this a lot too. But why have someone like Geoff Johns on whose sole purpose is to kind of go into these properties and find what's good about the comics and get them on the screen and stuff like that? And when you're talking about continuity, because it's not what you're talking about. I mean, Dark Knight had nothing to do. There's never been a Batman story like Dark Knight. Some of the stuff that happened in Dark Knight is the antithesis of Batman, you know, and yet it's the best Batman movie. It made the most amount of money, and, you know, Geoff Johns is nowhere near Batman 3, you know, and so it's just, I'm just saying, as an example, it's like, I don't necessarily think this is, I think, as a matter of fact, this is going really far away from the continuity, but, I mean, I'm okay with that, is what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, the idea of pandering to the audience.
How do we get on this?
Oh, yeah, I'm not even sure what we're talking about anymore.
Is it important for these films to pander to the audience and stuff? Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the fact that the demonstration of WonderCon was just to win these audience members over. And I was just like, well, right. I mean, is that even important? You know, does it really matter? Like, if you showed this to an audience, they'd think it was cool, but my girlfriend would not think it was cool. She's like, I still don't want to see that. It looks like just now
part of marketing,
shooting people up. And stuff.
Well, yeah,
it ends with marketing. You market to the San Diego and in the San Francisco and in New York market, and that builds the hype, and it's just marketing.
Exactly, that's what we're talking about. Is it even worth it to kind of waste the time to pander?
San Diego is the biggest thing for any kind of movie these days.
Right,
so
but his argument is that whether or not it's a waste of time to pander to the fans themselves. And honestly, I would honestly say it is, mainly because they will get the news out there a lot faster to a lot of different more media outlets. I mean, the fans themselves will put it out to the net while someone could find it easily. You know, I mean, if it goes through the, you know, a viral system.
I had a similar disagreement about this with Ben over on D Cups, what I was saying is they also showed this footage at CinemaCon, and they had a huge reaction from CinemaCon, and that's not the same audience as you're going to have at a WonderCon, especially since CinemaCon and WonderCon took place around the same time. There was great reactions coming out of CinemaCon of people who aren't necessarily, you know, these fans who've been reading the comic. And these people are like, hey, this is, you know, this gets me super excited for it. So, you know, it's, you know, and these are nerds, but they're nerds of a different sort. They're not necessarily the nerds who know everything about Green Lantern, like the nerds who are going to be watching this at WonderCon.
Well, yeah, I mean, Scott Pilgrim, again, is the example I'm using, where Scott Pilgrim owned San Diego. Everybody that year was saying how that was the shit, like, it packed out every room, people were loving it, it got nothing but good buzz, and that movie, like, opened at number 6 and didn't even make its money back, you know what I mean? As an example, and Karen brought up a good example of Watchmen too, that got a huge buzz and got a lot of marketing push and cost a lot of money and came out, did really well its opening weekend, and then people were like, well, this is completely garbage, like, I don't want to see this, so they didn't go see it anymore, you know what I mean? And it was like word for word the comics, you know, so was it worth it, you know what I mean? Like, do we really need to see the top knots in Watchmen, you know what I mean? So I don't know.
Alright, I concur with his name, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
before we move on, Carlton, do you have anything to add to this?
I'm fine with the movie itself. I'm not really bothered by some of the changes. I mean, I'm willing to give a movie a shot, you know, to see how it turns out. But at the same time, I do want some things to be referenced to, certain characters to be kept in. I don't mind if it goes its own route. I just don't want it to completely forget about the fan base. I mean, as long as it follows a few principal things about Green Lantern, doesn't just change the characters for the sake of changing it, and generally tells a good story, I'll be happy.
On that positive note,
I did think the footage looked awesome. I don't think anybody gave their actual opinions of the footage, more or less, but I think it looked awesome, and it made me want to see the movie when the trailer did not. So
it definitely added to the excitement of seeing it.
Right. I mean, just alone, the trailer itself got me excited to wait for June for when the movie actually is released. I'm more excited to see what else they're going to do. I've been excited to see most of the concepts that appeared, especially Tomar Rey's little tutorial on how to use a ring. That was an awesome shot. The Gatling gun was okay. I enjoyed the fact that I noticed that it was two colors. It was two colors that are just fully green. But anyone else wants to say how much they enjoyed the visual style of the movie?
Well, before that, did anybody have like any thoughts on Jeffrey Rush as Tomar?
We got a few lines. Like, it's not a line.
On the casting in general, then.
They're going for a type, obviously. I think Tomar Rey is not exactly the type that he is, but I mean, in the comics, but I mean, they're going for a type, and I appreciate that. I mean, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, I mean, you know, why not? You know, they're giving him a personality that's easily recognizable, you know, which is the kind of like, I guess, the older British sage kind of like butlery kind of guy. So I mean, that's fine.
You know, Jeffrey Rush has a little bit of buzz around him right now too, because he was just in an Oscar movie.
He's always has buzz around him. He's in Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, which is, you know, whatever, and you know, he's always had buzz. That guy's gonna be a billionaire until he's dead. Fucker.
Except for now.
We're gonna move on.
Come on, the look cool. I think the best part of the trailer was watching the Adam Sir Parallax fight look dope as hell. Me and Frankie were debating the logic of making Sinestro's, like, look weird with, like, make his, why you cast a guy look just like Sinestro and then make him look like Sinestro from the 50s and stuff, but, I mean, we also said the logic is that it's supposed to be Hal Jordan's the first human in the Corps, and if everyone in the Corps looked humanoid, it would be kind of defeating the purpose, you know, everyone just looks like him, just like, you're the first white-skinned dude we ever had in the Corps, which we don't want to get into that, you know what I mean? But I like the fact that all the core members look so insanely alien, and we might have seen, like, I mean, you know, this is a lot of characters we saw in toys already, but the fact that, like, you know, come on, Hanu looks nothing like Hanu, I think that's awesome, you know, and the fact that Tomar Rey looks like a praying mantis is awesome, and...
You thought Hanu looked awesome?
Yup, and I think,
He looks like Plato!
The fact that Rock Monster... Galaxy Quest.
Princess.
Yes, I would rather him look like the Thing, like he does in comics, than the shitty Play-Doh he looks like in this movie.
Han looks fine.
Well, look, they're coming up with distinctive looks to make all these characters, diverse. I mean, instead of giving them all human, like technical humanoid, you know, status, at least they all look, at least they could be completely aliens. I mean, Salad looks completely different.
Yes, Princess. Princess Yolande, I think that's what decides on.
Yolande.
Princess I looks absolutely disgusting. Yeah, it's.
I think it's good.
But even Salak looks
Vance,
good.
Vance, they look like awesome. I mean, Vance actually is probably the closest to the comics from the movies, or Kilowog, I guess. But Kilowog, they took away.
Stell looks the closest to the comics.
Stell and Salak.
No, Stell looks like a bug now. He's got like.
No,
he's like.
Stell looks pretty close to the comics.
Looks
you're looking at the wrong person.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Stell looks like Philip Tan, actually. Yep, Philip Tan's remake Stell.
For a second, I said he actually looked like Philip Tan. Like, Stell looks like Philip Tan. Like, I actually thought Philip Tan was in this movie.
Like that, Philip Tan, do you? call our website, let us know. Somebody send, if you guys get a chance to send me the picture later, because I'm looking at the picture that was in Toy Guide, and it looks like, he looks like a box, you know, with like an antenna.
Well, there was something in a thread.
Skinny
leg. It's one of my favorite threads, actually, on the Green Lantern forums, is the one where people have taken screen captures and are naming all the characters, because, hi, I need that. and it was mentioned in the thread that the toy is, was it an original? Thank you. yes, no, that the toy was a different design than the one that actually made it into the movie.
Oh, yeah.
So Stell doesn't look the same.
Maybe that's what it was. I was looking at the toy.
Yeah.
But that,
I like
that's
that. Green Man looks nothing like Green Man. I think that's pretty cool. Good for you.
What is it about these chests? Like, Salak's chest is sticking out like a Bug is trying to escape it.
Well, they're also
they have different skeletal structures, different vascular structures. They're just trying to make them look not more alien than human.
Right.
I love their supposed to name the one that keeps giving birth to itself. Oh, Apro or whatever. Yeah, I like the
Apros. Yeah,
that was awesome. You win with Apros. I think nobody called out Boudicca on the thing. I'm pretty sure that's supposed to be Boudicca in one of those shots.
I think that's supposed to be Boudicca. Like, I think somebody specifically said new character. I'm like, wait, I think that's Boudicca.
I'm pretty sure it looks just like that Boudicca Heracles. Anyway, I think it looks awesome. The fact that they look nothing like the comics is dope as hell. I think you're getting away from, and people were like, oh, well, I think Kuon said something about they based on Ivory's designs, because Ayn Rand says my designs were up on the wall, but they look nothing like it. I think
no,
it's great.
No,
you
yeah,
can really
right.
see Neville Page's, you really see Neville Page's design in this, because all these guys look like, they look like they're all from the Star Trek movie. I mean, it seems like silly considering, but I just think you can kind of see. I love it. Really happy with
it. It does kind of look like that. Like one of those Beetleborgs things.
So, like, completely awesome, right, guys? Right? It's awesome.
Yeah, all right. Can we move on? I'm tired of this.
Well, on that note, and the fact that Brandon has completely become bored of it, we're going to move on to our reviews of Brightest Day number 23. Soon we conclude the story of Brightest Day.
Yay.
And finally the reveal of the Protector of Life, or Protector of Earth,
almost
whichever
over.
You want to call it.
Ultimate Savior.
Pretty much, yeah, the Ultimate Savior. It picks up right where number 22 leaves, left off. Dead man confronting Firestorm. Firestorm not understanding a damn thing about what's going on.
Me being bored out of my mind.
And the fact that the White Lantern is still the most vaguest piece of, intelligent form of life that's ever been. And the fact that we get the reveal of the dark entity, the death, what's it called again? The Avatar.
Dark
of death.
Avatar.
Or the Avatar.
Dark Avatar.
The dark Avatar. Yeah, they said,
and
also dark
they cover the earth in dark water. Okay!
Yeah.
Alright, it's revealed to be, Swamp Thing's husk.
And the ultimate savior's dead body of Swamp Thing's former, brain?
What's his name again? Alec Holland?
Alec Holland.
Yeah, the ultimate savior has been, the man has been dead for,
Since Swamp Thing showed up, yeah.
I mean, like 60 years?
We also got the elementals. I don't know if anybody really cares about that.
I hated that.
I know, I don't care.
The Parliament of Wind or the Parliament of Earth.
It's just a waste of everybody's time.
Is Alive Man Heart? Because I want to see Captain Planet.
Everybody's saying, where's Captain Planet? I liked the, what we're advertised, the battle between Deadman and Firestorm. That was probably the most exciting fight they'd had in this entire series so far, really. I mean, the back and forth, the kind of clever use of their powers, the fact that they really did live up to the hype of that they've been talking about for 6 months. Yeah, I feel like I wasn't at all misled. The battle between Firestorm.
And I'm thinking, I'm like, what the fuck is he talking about? I don't remember them on a
bunch. I think he blasted them with a lantern once or something.
I think he might have hit him with it. He
spent the entire issue with his fist pointed at his face.
Yeah, the door.
I think without sounding too bitter or too shitty or too redundant, this is ridiculous. I mean, I think not only was everyone at every convention and every message board for the past 8 months saying, as soon as Vertigo was announced as dissolving, the next word out of somebody's mouth was like, oh, Swamp Thing's going to be revealed at the end of Brightest Day. I mean, not only was everyone saying this at every convention, six guys would come up every panel and ask DC, seriously, is it going to be Swamp Thing? So you have your audience guessing it for 8 months, so it's not at all a surprise. Not only that is that insulting, but the fact of the matter is he has not been mentioned or foreshadowed in any way, shape, or form, besides the fact that he's something to do with protecting the Earth, at all in this story. And anybody who had any kind of emotional investment in this story, if you are that kind of shallow, weird person that had an emotional investment in Brightest Day, that has never read a comic before and thought Brightest Day was any good, they're disappointed, because they're like, the big reveal at the end, they're like, who? I mean, who in their right mind even knows what this is? How do you bring in new readers with this bullshit? I mean, I'm not even getting mad about it. I'll stay calm this whole time, but I have to say that this is disappointment of the highest order.
Well, I didn't even realize it was Swamp Thing until I saw the credit saying next issue, Swamp Thing.
You didn't even know what Swamp Thing is? Look at this guy.
Well, I knew when they said Alec Holland. At first I just thought what the hell is this coming out of the ground?
You know, you guys, like, you guys don't know the visual of Swamp Thing? That's crazy. You don't know.
Wait, so you're telling me when you saw the Avatar of Death coming out,
you didn't know that was Swamp Thing?
Trashing thing. You didn't know that was Swamp Thing.
It was like vines and stuff.
No, the V-Stage. It looked like
the anti monitor.
It looked, that's just,
really?
Swamp Thing has that distinct visual look. But
I mean, it's not like I was blown away, like, oh my god, it's Swamp Thing. It's just like, I didn't, you know, it just didn't click as quickly.
Who could even care?
I was still focused on why, you know, Green Arrow was trapped in his little forest and so. You know, there's a lot going on. I was probably still pissed off about coloring mistakes and continuity references that were terrible.
Yeah, good art. Good art. And also the whole reveals of everybody's supposed to have these things they're supposed to do, it all seems really pointless. And not only that, but it's like the ring is like, you have to do this. And it literally hands the guy the gun to do it and pulls him in front of the person. It's like, what was the point of bringing Captain Boomerang back if you could just throw a black boomerang you created at her anyway? I mean, it's stupid. The whole thing, there's no suspense, there's no build-up. It's all so shallow. Just the whole thing is so shallow. You have, seven issues, what are these guys going to do? You have one issue where it says, this is what you're all going to do, and you wait another 20 issues for them to do anything. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I want to hear somebody else say something.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Here's the thing. I think the word for this issue is just jumbled. This is a jumbled mess. Like Eric said, there's just too many things going on at once. They're trying to tie up loose ends, like with Captain Boomerang. They're trying to get you to get into the next big thing, which is the Swamp Thing reference. Then they're trying to establish that, Martian Manhunter, Firestorm, and these elemental guys is, you know, they were destined for this moment. And really, they're not, because they're not even winning the battle.
Yeah, they're not doing anything.
Like, what the fuck? And then I'm thinking, like, all while this is going on, I'm like, what information did you get from the Ansa Monitor that, you know, is so significant now?
Yeah, like, it's all so pointless.
Like, did you not know his name or something?
Yeah.
The funny thing about that entire exchange is still the fact that I brought this up to Eric before, is that three of the, seven characters that were brought back to life by, the White Lantern have nothing to do with the story.
Yeah.
Have nothing to do with the story. Maxwell Lord, Osiris, and Jade were brought back from the dead for apparently nothing to do with what's going on now.
Well,
Osiris,
Max,
you know, got his place. Max Lord has his own miniseries.
Max Lord is in JLGL.
Right, they're in other books, yeah, but they have nothing to do with Brightest Day.
Generation Lost and Brightest Day are both, like, it's supposed to be a weekly series together, kind of, type thing.
Yeah.
So it's it's not technically Brightest Day.
Thinking about, like, coming out of Blackest Night and the seven characters that were brought back, you would have to say that Generation Lost capitalized the most, because Jade isn't doing anything impressive in Justice League. Osiris is one of the worst characters in Titans, and that's saying a lot.
Somebody's reading Titans.
Yeah.
I finished reading Titans. I know exactly.
Excuse me, guys. Stop reading it so they stop making it, guys.
Maxwell Lord has been the best return. Like, technically, what's his name? Jesus. Thawne. Professor Thawne, Reverse Flash, was brought back, technically.
And
all he's done since he's come back was hang upside down for a second and run away. It's like these characters were so mishandled.
Like you said, I believe the best, obviously, and I was talking to Frankie, the most interesting one to even, I mean, 90% of the people that were brought back were only killed a couple months before, or we weren't even sure if they were dead. I'm pretty sure Aquaman wasn't dead, and the Hawks were only just killed in that
was series. Come
brought back. And Martian Manhunter, again, just killed the year before, and Osiris, same thing. Osiris was dead from 52, and the only reason he was even mentioned, the first time he was mentioned is in Blackest Night, and that Blackest Night special they gave him a perfect ending. You never needed to see that character again. They're like, well, fuck that noise, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, I don't understand where the logic is. I mean, the only interesting character is Max Lord, only because of
the Hawks. They had just that, like, and that's what
the Hawks died at the beginning of the series.
All he did was kill them so he can get rid of Kendra Saunders and stuff. That's all the only reason he killed them, which is ridiculous. I mean, who cares? Another example of pandering to the fans. Even in the comics themselves, does anybody care who Hawkgirl is? You know, besides me. You know, besides me. You know, I mean, So why don't you just make Eric happy? I'll buy it. Just make me happy.
Well, I think the thinking behind Brightest Day, and that, this probably should be saved for the next time we review the Clino issue, but the thinking behind Brightest Day was a fresh start for all these characters. So we're going to tell this year-long story that's going to give you a fresh look at Aquaman, Firestorm, and blah, say blah. And now that we're getting an Aquaman series out of this, we're getting a Hawkman series out of this. We'll probably get a Martian Manhunter in Adventure Comics or something. I just feel like they wasted a whole year trying to sell us on these characters and their roles gallery, and they failed on every opportunity. Gave them this big stage, and they whiffed.
What's funny, and they have, what you were saying the other the only series they have announced officially is the Aquaman series. I believe even Generation Lost, which everyone unanimously agrees is a big success coming out of this. I don't think there's any kind of anything planned for those guys after that.
I think Winnick has been hinting at it, but
well, they should have announced it by now. I mean, the series is over in a month or two. I mean, that's what they're doing with it. I mean, maybe we'll hear an announcement in another couple of weeks,
a week or two.
They should have said something was happening. I mean, you know, it's not like anybody believes all those characters are going to be dead and DC's never going to touch that again. DC's not about telling good stories. They're about selling more comics. You know, the same six guys that are signing the comics. The
hello, 14 Eisner nominations for...
Oh, yeah. Yes.
None of which are Brightest Day.
But, yeah. Jeff Johns get nominated again this year?
No, he did not.
Did he get nominated for another Scream Award?
Yeah, he's going to get a Scream Award this year.
That's all that matters, a Scream
Award. We'll find out in October.
You'll have to sell the Screams.
I mean, I don't mean to sound bitter, and I know I complain about Brightest Day every single issue we've ever had of this series, except for that one that I liked with the dinosaur.
Aquaman.
And I liked some Aquaman stuff. But they even sour me to Aquaman, you know, I mean... They you're 100% right. They dropped the ball on this in every possible way. I mean, there's nothing remotely, nothing. I mean, this miniseries could not have existed and it wouldn't have mattered, you know. And the fact that the big reveal that they're bringing Swamp, the fact that they're saying, you know, fuck everything we did all year, bringing back Swamp Thing. That's the thing. That's what we're going to be talking about the next 2 years. And they've announced that Swamp Thing's going to be part of the new DC Online game. He's going to be part of the new content they put out.
They're going full force. Like already, we talked about the Aftermath series. They're like, Swamp Thing, really. Here he is. Not even 2 weeks later.
Oh, and Swamp Thing's a big push. Like,
yeah, this is what you guys been, you know, waiting for and calling us out on for the past, you know, for the year. You know, you all want Swamp Thing.
I mean, they got a movie, a TV series out of him. He's sellable to kids, right?
Two video games.
Swamp Thing's most successful period of comic book writing ever. The only reason Swamp Thing is still known to this day is because of some insane... He started Vertigo. I mean, the insane shit they did with his character and the fact that it was so off the board and so non-mainstream and stuff. And you know, you read it now, it's really dated, but whatever. At the time, it was ridiculously provocative, whatever. And the fact that we're going to bring this character's only famous for being provocative back at the DCU, like, so? His title's not going to sell the same way his title
just
hasn't...
Like in 04 with Diggle.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, you know, even then they brought, and Brian K. Vaughan wrote it the year before, a couple of years before that with, you know, a female protagonist that was a teenager hotness, and it's kind of like, you know.
It was like his daughter.
His daughter.
Yeah, who was like 11, but they aged her up to 18, so they get the female hotness and stuff like that, you know, and it was like, and they put a new young hot guy on it, Brian K. Vaughan, it didn't sell. It's not going to sell, man. Like, who cares? You're going to make him part of another big event, and he's going to go away. I mean, who cares, dude? Nobody cares. I'm sorry.
I think my
I can say you're wrong here. There's plenty of people care about this. Bringing the sales of Brightest Day up. You know, it's true. That book is more than still going to sell. So a lot of people who are reading this book are still going, oh my God, it's the greatest source of all time.
This is the highest selling book they're putting out when, you know, Batman Inc. is in out.
I'll be honest here too, right? I mean, we've talked about this before too, but like, is the fact that Brightest Day is the highest selling comic that this company is putting out, I think that's indicative of the company's faults, you know? Yeah, it's the highest selling comic, but it's out of everything they're offering, and it's so continuity heavy, and it's so intrinsically audience heavy, and, you know, it's like brand new number one, new series, jump in here, and then anybody who jumps in is like, who is that? Who the fuck is that?
who is that?
Every issue, every page, who is that?
Well, again, it sent me again one of those things where, brand new readers coming up to the book, and
so you're interested in the new characters.
Right. Like, for example, you know, they're reading the book. They have no idea what it is. They see the character, they're like, who the hell is that? They always announce him, like, pretty much at the end of the story. They're now intrigued. They're now intrigued as to who the hell was that? In the very next issue, they're gonna explain to you with a bunch of who that character is.
Yeah.
Who that character's done, what he's done for the past 20 years.
Yeah.
And then when they finally tell you what he's done in the past 20 years, you're like, what? And then they're killed right afterwards. They're either murdered, neck snap broken, or something's gonna happen, and then they're gone. And you tell yourself, wow, that character has been such a big part of that other character's, dealio for the past 20 years. Now he's like, what's his new character gonna do now? I mean, you've just taken away their one thing that they've been known for the past, again, I'll say it again, 20 years. You're not gonna be invested as to what's gonna happen next.
And, you know, like I said, I love Swamp Thing. I really, really do love Swamp Thing. I think I have read 70% of the Swamp Thing comics published. I really have, you know, I used to own the whole Vertigo run and stuff. I mean, I really do like anything remotely interesting with him, especially the fact is Swamp Thing, by the time his series is over, he's infinitely powerful, like infinitely powerful. It's like the only thing they could do is nerf him like they do the Spectre. I mean, there's nothing they could do with this character. By the time the reason the character stopped getting published actually is because no one could think of what to do with him, you know, and to make him the new equivalent of like the Spectre or the new equivalent of the Phantom Stranger is, or even making the new equivalent of Ray Palmer, whatever they're going to do. It's just not going to make the character interesting. You know,
who
cares? Yeah, I mean, yeah, right. Who cares? You know, I mean, like, really. And again, this is exactly what I'm talking about. Like, DC is killing its own industry, man. Like, the fact that their highest selling comic this year is this, and it's like thousands and thousands and thousands of readers down from the year before, should be an indication to them. And it isn't. They don't care. They're like, whatever. It's a dying industry anyway. It's like, no, it's not a dying industry. It's a thriving industry. It just found a whole new avenue of sale that's being tapped. Dudes are throwing comics together in 6 months and they're millionaires, you know? Like, why can't you have a piece of the action, DC? Because you're a fucking idiot because you want to bring Swamp Thing back at the last minute, you know? Whatever. I'm sorry. I said I wouldn't get mad. Fuck them.
Yeah. I mean, if we have been given some foreshadow into the Swamp Thing, I think he deserves some foreshadowing. You would think if they've got this giant marketing push for the DCU Online, the miniseries afterwards, and you know he's gonna get a series out of this eventually, you would think that they would bother over the course of 23 issues to foreshadow
a tiny bit. Again, in a way, it's more like Jeff Johnson saying, you know what, I'm giving the fans a lot of credit. I don't want to give them a hint as to what's going to go
down. They'll figure it out.
They'll figure it out. When they figure it out, they're going, like, how it's already coming.
But then earn it in some other way. You know, right. Like, don't use this as a spectacle stunt to bring back.
It will be called clever writing. It'll be called clever writing. If you can actually write this in a way that you should have seen it coming, but you didn't expect it to happen.
I think I put it with the White Lantern aspect of Blackest Night. It's like, yeah, the coloring is on the wall, the writing is on the wall. You got all these lanterns. Of course, it's going to be the White Lantern at the end, but you don't expect it. He won't go down that road. And then he does.
And he did the same thing with Blackest Night, where he's all like, who's going to be the White? He's like, there's not going to be a White Lantern, idiots. And then there was a White Lantern, and he's like, well, it's not going to be Hal Jordan, morons. And then it was Hal Jordan, you know? It's like, you're an idiot. And not only, you know, honestly, what would be more interesting in Brightest Day? What if the premise of Brightest Day was that one of the resurrected people was going to be the ultimate savior of Earth, but they had to fight each other? You know, like, at the end of the series, it's all about who's going to be the protector. Is it going to be Hawkman? Is it going to be Aquaman? And at the end, it was Aquaman, you know? And then everybody's like, wow, now Aquaman has something to say and do. Like, we don't just have to put out another series that Jeff Johnson's going to write for 7 issues. Then it's going to tank 10 issues after he gets off the title, you know? Like, why not just give him a brand new direction? Because who else gives a shit? Make him a defender of the Earth. I mean, he controls 75% of its surface. You know what I mean? Why not do something like that? It would have been more interesting to have built up all these characters and then pit them against each other. I mean, for me, again, and not to be like, I was not at all pulled into the hype at all. For me, the most interesting part of the solicitation of this issue was they said Firestorm versus Deadman. I was like, all right, that means that by the time this get to this issue, they're going to set up these two characters, ideological opposites, which they did not, and they didn't even fight. You know, I mean, you know, so what was the point? I mean, like, why not create a more interesting story where the actual characters involved in the story have something to say of what's happening in the story? There's no plot. There's no character development. There's nothing. There's nothing happening in this except occasionally pretty art by Ivan Reyes, you know.
And a lot of confusion on the part of all these characters.
Props.
Well, there's a couple of the guys who were alright. I mean, Patrick Gleason obviously is Patrick Gleason, so nobody can touch him, so. But yeah.
Alright, we're gonna move away from
something more pleasant.
I feel
so wrong. I feel like the three of us just like sit. Fuck the three of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, what do you guys?
Cool. Yeah,
I don't read it, so.
Oh yeah, Kuan doesn't read it.
Kuan doesn't read it.
Yeah, Kuan is so fucking smart.
He's a smart kid.
So he's going places.
Nice.
Come on, guys, I got to issue 5, you know.
Hey, Colton, what do you think of the issue?
Brightest day. Brightest day, brightest day. I expected a slight bit more. I mean, this whole elemental thing kind of seemed like a bit of an ass pull. The whole Dark Avatar thing, the more I hear about it, kind of seems like an ass pull. The fact that we didn't have a fight between Deadman and Firestorm seems kind of like an ass pull. I'm starting to summarize this issue pretty clearly, I think, and that I'm kind of disappointed. I mean, it's kind of twist for the sake of twist. There's nothing's really significantly happening, even though it should be. Even with this giant monster, it doesn't feel like anything's actually happened. I don't feel all that threatened. It's just, we have the solution here. That thing can't get through. Just do it and we're done. That's how this issue feels. It shouldn't feel like this. Honestly, it shouldn't. An idea, this issue should have been fine. It should have continued on with what it was doing, and then eventually we'd get this conclusion. We'd be like, oh, hey, this reading this issue was totally worth it. This whole series, it was worth it, right? I'm not feeling that, and I should be. I should be the happy-go-lucky, happy guy who's always happy, and I'm going to keep saying happy repeatedly, happy, happy. But no, and that's sad. Why?
Are you a Swamp Thing fan? Are you?
No, he didn't recognize Swamp Thing when he saw him.
I'm not familiar with the character.
Yeah, he wasn't familiar. He wasn't familiar.
I love Swamp Thing. I'm just gonna say,
I enjoy. I love Swamp. Yeah, I love Swamp Thing. Especially
Swamp Thing, you are amazing.
You are.
You mean everything. You mean everything to me.
Well, no, that's the actual theme song of his cartoon. You are. Arcane does everything nasty.
Yeah.
What? Everything nasty? All the nasty things he does. It's hilarious. Why does anybody work for him?
Okay.
Bing.
Okay.
Bing. What do you think? What you read?
No, I didn't. I read some of them in the middle. And I had no idea what was going on, had no idea why I should be caring about the fact that these characters were dying. And so I stopped. But I will say that knowing, even though it was all ass-pull, knowing that Swamp Thing is at the end makes me kind of want to go through and pick everything up and kind of read it. Because I grew up with the Swamp Thing movies, the Heather Locklear one.
Oh, yeah.
Formative development. And of course, the last thing I think I've read with Swamp Thing was an issue of Hellblazer, where I think he manifests as tobacco that Constantine was smoking, and then
he's
awesome. Himself to a joint.
He's the man.
So that's pretty much the only thing I've got for Swamp Thing. But now that I know that Swamp Thing is in it, I'm more than willing to try and, you know, locate the back issues. I've got enough conventions coming up where I'm sure I can.
I think they're reprinting the Alan Moore stories now. I think they just finished
they did.
The last trade.
They just, I think they put up volume 7 or something. Yeah. But the artist on that has a real issue with it. He said there was all kinds of, they didn't consult him, and there's all kinds of issues that he's always wanted to fix that he didn't bother to fix. And
errors?
No, like coloring errors and art errors. And he said there's like a major, major problem that was with some of the reprints that they just continued printing, even though it was like not like the original comics. So it's like a real sore spot. And Alan Moore just went on a tirade about how DC does nothing but mine his old stories. And then the next thing they do is like, fuck it. You got it, Alan. Great idea, brother.
Fuck it, right.
Oh, that's I wasn't even thinking about that for a second there. Oh, you're right. Oh. Well, you know, on that note, we're going to move on to Emerald Warriors number 8, the third parter of the War of the Green Lanterns. And the head-to-head fight between Hal Jordan and Guy Gardner finally comes to a gigantic explosion.
And clothes being taken off.
Oh, God!
And many innuendos emerge from here. Many, many.
The hotness.
There is one panel in here. The moment I saw it, I was like, I cannot wait for the podcast because I cannot wait to talk about how awesome this panel is.
Can we start?
And by awesome, I mean wrong.
Let's start there. What's that panel?
When Guy lands on the planet and he's thirsty, seriously.
Oh, he definitely drinks a dick there. Yeah, I actually made a little picture of that. I made a little picture of that.
I know I spent a lot of time.
It's dripping into his mouth.
Dude, he makes a dick and drinks it.
Yes,
like,
that's
amazing.
I saw that too.
I saw that on bus, and I was cackling like a mad woman.
Fernando
I was like, this is the best.
It's forever.
I didn't even notice that until just now. Oh my God.
How do you not notice
that? Your mind is nowhere near as dirty as mine is, and that's a little.
I definitely noticed that right away.
He's a pure boy, so. He's got a good heart.
Friends to pay attention at whose dick whose mouth is.
It's not even the ice. It's the expression. The whole thing. It's like that's a scan's daily image.
Worse yet, you look over and there's that big ass animal over there.
What is he eating though? I don't understand. What is he doing?
It's supposed to be.
What do you do when you're on a?
It's not a thermos. I think it's an icicle, and he's like licking it. It's like hard for us to figure out what it is, you know. There's no reason to assume it's anything but a dick that he's drinking.
It wouldn't be half as bad if it didn't have that head on it and the slit in the front.
Exactly.
No, it's the O face. Come on now.
Now, getting back to why Fernando Passeron is awesome. Not only did this guy have a fight scene, now let's remember Tyler Kirkham's fight scene, quote unquote fight scene between John Stewart and Kyle Rayner, where all they did was hit each other in empty space. This guy has the gall to draw during a snowstorm with individually drawn snowflakes with their hair moving the whole time. I mean, an environment where they're actually fighting and stuff. I mean, you know, good for this guy. Good for this guy.
Good for Peter, because it's not like Tyler had
he didn't have to draw during a snowstorm. He didn't have to draw. I mean, there's detail in this.
The plan was to put him on a cold place, so.
Yeah, but
you expected him to
get away with not doing it. You really think that Tyler Kirkham would have
been it could have been a calm surface.
I'm pretty fucking sure.
Tyler Kirkham does not draw comics. Me too.
The snowstorm was definitely in the script.
Yeah, it's possible. I doubt it, but it's possible. But even then, who else draws in snowstorms? Who else in comics draws hair actually moving?
I definitely don't want to take away from Passenger because his art looked great aside from the penis.
The penis.
that was the best part. Awesome.
No, the worst art he does in the comic is a double splash page. How 90% of the lanterns of the double splash page are not at all, they're completely anatomically incorrect. Look at Vanth in the middle. That's like the worst picture anyone's ever drawn.
I hate that you're looking past him and stuff. Like, some of them aren't even bothering to look at him, and then
it's poorly drawn. Yeah.
Well, I give him props for doing that double page.
It can come.
gobble gobble. I give him props for the double page. I mean, it's one of the weird things to have, especially to draw Kilowog from behind, because he's so noticeable from the front. You know, it's weird to see the character from, like, you know, no a different angle like that.
Passer's weakness is proportion and perspective. I mean,
hey, that's F sharp Bell.
I think if you remember that Gleason issue where they zoomed in on Kilowog's face and it was just the
so
ugliest
good.
Thing you've ever seen in your life.
Yes.
you just remember, like, that's why we don't zoom in on Kilowog anymore. I think Family Guy made a joke of that's why you don't see characters from the side, because they just look even worse than they already do. And it's like
sort of Angel, where the guy who played Wesley had a stroke, so they had to shoot him from the right side of his face the whole time. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, some angles just, you know, shoot me from a good side, you know? And I guess that's why we don't see Kilowog from the back of his head.
back to the issue real quick, if we want to get into that, if you guys don't mind. The first half of the issue was horrible. Horrible. It was like 10 pages of characters reciting the last three issues of the storyline so far. And worse, it was like 10 pages, like, or more than the whole. I'm getting up to it now.
It would be weird if they didn't 13 discuss things with each
other. No, you're absolutely right, but that's the hallmark of crossovers, that, like, you figure out a way for the character to get the information so it's not redundant to you, and the characters can fill you in what's been going on so far. I mean, there's no real logic to saying, like, oh, you know what, maybe people only buy Emerald Warriors and they don't buy titles. I mean, that's ridiculous, you know. I mean, if you haven't been buying the other titles by now, it's like reading chapter 6 of a book and that's all you're reading, you know. But so they go into it too long, and there's too much, and Tomasi shows his weaknesses. He doesn't know how human beings speak, so but Tomasi also shows his strength. This is definitely I don't know how you compare it, but this is definitely a much better fight, because it's actually a fight, and it's actually a pretty good fight. I mean, it doesn't go on for as long as I like, but it's a pretty awesome fight, actually.
Like, for a second, I kind of forgot that this was, like, a mind control thing. I thought, like, for a second, I thought they were actually fighting, as opposed to, like, you know, with the issue of Core, you know, not to say anything about Bedard necessarily, but, like, you could clearly tell that this was, like,
this was a lot more personal.
This is what I thought. This. Although you're absolutely right, it's what it should have been like from the beginning for everybody.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess there's also the fact Core really pushed into it, and there was a lot of visual cues as well that it was mind control stuff. But, like, in here, like, you know, you really believe that they were fighting for a second, and it's like, oh well, yeah, this is, you know, like, this is necessarily not a fight that we normally have, but, you know,
it is. It's it's really because while they are partially being controlled, unlike the other fight, this fight there's a lot of personal stuff in between the two already. It's just being exacerbated.
I think it's because because Peter Tomasi knows the character motivations of these characters.
I think he was trying to introduce a conflict, which works between John and Kyle, but it just doesn't. I think you're right though that it seems like a completely different miniseries, you know, because the fact that Gantt, just to pull off the two guys' rings, it exploded his hand, and it's kind of like these guys are just able to talk themselves out of it, you know. That either means that these guys have much better willpower than John and Kyle, or that John and Kyle have such intense willpower that somebody who created the rings and can control them at will, their hand explodes when they try to take it off them and stuff. So,
well, remember John's whole willpower exceeding the rings' capabilities thing. It could be possible.
Sense. Like, that makes any sense. Hal Jordan created an entire city full of living, breathing people, and the Guardians took the ring away because they were like, yeah, you're not supposed to do that. That's too much for the ring. How could him create? And Greenlands have made planets before. I'm not even going to get into it. That was stupid. Whatever. Anyway, I do want to say Guy Gardner, I guess Peter Tomasi had some kind of say, because Guy Gardner definitely kicks Hal Jordan's ass a little bit in this. Yeah. I mean,
it seemed more of an even fight rather than a one-sided fight. Guy kicks his ass throughout the entire fight.
Does
more things than Hal does in the issue, but Hal does apparently get him back for every time Guy gets him in the face.
He hits Guy a couple times, but most of the issue is Guy on the aggressor, and I think they try to write it off as
Kyle. He got a bunch of tackles in there.
And Hal kind of realizes what's going on first, but he's already been getting his ass kicked for like six pages by that point. And you know what? Not to be like a total little boy about it, but Guy got the last shot in, so he wins.
And he gave him a noogie.
I do enjoy, like, this I think has been true for the last few issues, but I do enjoy the fact that Peter Tomasi is listed not as writer, but as story and words.
Story?
Yeah, it's a very pretentious way to be, but whatever. I mean, that used to be the way. I don't know, whatever. As long as Tomasi's writing Green Lantern, I'm going to be reading Green Lantern. So if he wants to call himself Grand Pumbaa and White Wizard of all, he can call himself whatever he wants. just keep putting action in there. Though, I don't like how they took Kilowog out of it. This felt like them taking Kilowog out of the story for the majority of it. I mean, obviously that was how it had to be because they wanted to be about the four main guys, but I don't really like that, you know? I don't know. I kind of wish
we'll get Kilowog back, but it serves story purposes on its own.
I was excited to see, like, Kilowog versus Psylocke and more matchups, you know?
It'll probably happen, but it probably won't happen now. You know, again, Kilowog is one of the other characters that wasn't affected by Parallax's, influence. So he will be a major player down, probably more like later on in the story. But, you know, again, for story purposes, they have to set up the two conflicts to get them out the way, apparently, you know, between Hal Jordan and Guy Gardner and Kyle Rayner versus John Stewart. So, you know, it sets it up. We'll more likely see Kilowog later on. We'll more likely see Kilowog either possessed or, still not influenced by Parallax. Who knows?
Yeah, I think one of the things I like the idea that the characters are actually having a fight about their ideologies and their personalities, because that's like, should be the whole point, right? The problem is they only bring up stuff that's happened since Sinestro Corps War, which makes sense, you know, but, when Hal says, oh, what are you, a shiny beacon of light? Like that time you were Red Lantern, it's like, that is the least of the shitty things that Guy Gardner's done if you follow Green Lantern comics.
Don't you remember that one time he left you floating in space to die?
Green Lantern, yeah. He tried to kill, he murdered people left and right. I mean, you know, Guy Gardner is a shitty, shitty dude. I mean,
has Hal stopped being on, when was he on Oa long enough to find out Guy was a Red Lantern?
No. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, right. But
no, more like, later. More like it was mentioned.
I'm sure they got like a newsletter.
This is weeks later.
they met it back up on Earth, didn't they?
A green memo.
If Guy Gardner likes Hal Jordan enough to make a giant picture of his face and talk to it, and hit in the middle for hours on end, I'm sure he keeps him appraised with emails of what's going on.
We don't really see, I mean, they're traveling in space for an awful long time, and we don't, like, see frame after frame of them traveling. So there's gotta be, like, email or some sort of a
Lantern Twitter
letter that they read.
talk in the pub.
It's funny because I like this. I actually like this characterization of Guy Gardner because it's less of the whole gung-ho, he's ultra-conservative, but we still like him anyway, stuff they've been doing the last few years, which has made him kind of likable. But this gets back to the whole pathetic Guy Gardner angle, because that's Guy Gardner's whole main characterization when he first showed up. He's more pathetic. Like, this whole issue, all he does is whine that everybody likes. I mean, he's saying it without saying it, but he's passive-aggressively saying everybody likes you more than me, and that's some bullshit, and I'm the best and stuff. And it's like the basic kind of like the old-school Guy Gardner personality. It's like, you know, original Guy Gardner. And I like that, that they play him up, that he's just really a sad, lonely little dude who just wants to be good at stuff, you know, and the only person who ever liked him is a gypsy ice princess and stuff, and she didn't even like him anymore, you know, and like, you know, and his best friend is some guy who's hanging out with Jon Stewart all the time. I mean, I don't know. I like it. I like that he seems.
Well, again, it's one of the old fears that's been drawn up again. I mean, that's one of the good characterizations that Tomasi does in the book. I mean, it's pretty funny where Guy brings up, you know, his whole paralyzed influence thing between him and Hal. But it's just a weird characterization that everybody seems to be like believing that Hal Jordan is still the best that's done anything.
Your track record is bad.
Your track record went to freaking the ground.
If I had Hal's track record, I wouldn't have a job. You know what I mean? Like, anytime you'd be fired from that. But
he's the son of a diplomat. He's got immunity.
Must be what it is. I do like them using the constructs the way they use in this issue. Again, you could have seen more of it because you really only see that as they're fighting one or two constructs and stuff. But I liked it. I like the hockey. Come on, hockey fuck. Everybody loves that. Come on, it's me. But and also, I mean, you know, you get that whole what they do all the time now is they have them attack with multiple constructs of their old costume and stuff.
Yeah, right.
You know, and the one construct that Guy makes while Hal is trying to shoot him in the head, and Guy is too busy making a construct of his fantasy of Abin Sur giving him a ring and making a nice sweet smile at him and stuff. And Guy makes the stupidest face anyone's ever made.
Huh?
That's what his guy is. I think Guy's secretly gay, and that's fine. That's just, he's so like, you know, that's why he makes sticks and drinks them, et cetera. You know, fantasizes about Abin Sur giving him a ring on the special day. You know, I mean, I don't know. Colton, what did you think of the issue, Colton?
It's not an issue. I liked it. I mean, it was cool to finally see all this tension and stuff added on by the fear of Parallaxes being in the battery, just build up to them just like busting each other's heads in. I kind of found some of the constructs to be an interesting choice, especially for, like you mentioned, Guy's whole creepy ass fantasies. He's tugging on Hal's hair about Abin Sur giving him the ring. It was just ridiculous. But in the end, the way this issue ends with them with their costumes for some reason just sparkling off. And then take off the rings. It's like, oh yeah, what now? We're in the middle of an icy planet. Crap.
Yeah, I do enjoy the fact that that John and Kyle happened to be wearing, you know, t-shirts and jeans and no shoes, and Guy and Hal just happened to be wearing thick clothing.
No, it's a good thing I'm wearing this jacket. It's a good thing I'm wearing a sweater.
I mean, it makes sense. Guy Hal always wears the bomber jacket, so fine. But like, Guy just so happens to be wearing a warm enough hoodie.
It could have been his last act.
Just happens to be ready for the cold planet that they didn't even know they were going to go to.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just kind of funny.
You know, it's cold in space. You know, it's cold.
Yeah. Maybe he sleeps in that hoodie. Last time we saw him leave his house,
he's wearing jeans.
I like his jeans.
I'm just curious how the hood from his hoodie fits underneath his lantern costume. Like, well, for some reason, I got really stuck just thinking about the logistics of that and how uncomfortable that must be.
The same way that Hal Jordan's costume is skin tight and he's got a bomber jacket. That's clearly
Guy's costume is the least ridiculous of hiding clothes in it. I mean, he's got the thickest jacket of any of the lanterns.
Yeah.
But I did wonder, like, are they not going to be able to use their rings? I mean, clearly they are. I mean, otherwise, how the hell are they going to get off the planet?
Well, they have
it's really freaking cold, and they're just not going to have their rings anymore. Well, I guess we're walking.
Hal's got six rings in his pocket.
One of the things we haven't mentioned yet is that Hal actually calls the Power Ranger group, he calls them the New Guardians and stuff. Why is he calling them the New Guardians? You know, I mean, it's one thing to be like, that's what they're called in the story, but like, why is he calling them the New Guardians? It doesn't make any sense.
Ego.
For the audience themselves don't know what to call them, so technically Hal has, it's being written in words.
You should have just Sinestro and the others, like, they know.
Yeah, could have, but no. They have to keep marketing New Guardians.
He should have made some sort of ridiculous pop culture reference.
Since the last show, we've already mentioned that Hal does have in the possession the New Guardians power rings.
And, conveniently, six non-Green Lantern rings, and there's right, six so. People who were not affected by Parallax and are immune now.
I know. And it's funny too, because they, it's like, he says the New Guardians, and what we should have assumed are, you know, the guys who fought Snowflame, the cocaine guy, and the guys who were created after Millennium, you know, because those guys actually are the New Guardians, but I don't know, whatever. It's a little stupid. It's kind of like, every single time we get a new Superman movie, there needs to be at least three scenes where somebody explains why he's called Superman, because it seems arrogant and shitty for him to name himself Best Man, you know, but he gets a pass. F that.
I can just imagine every time that Hal mentions that they're the New Guardians, Sinestro just grabs where his pierced ear was and remembers the plant guy.
Well, here's the thing. We've got part 4 coming up with Green Lantern, like Kenna said, they're stuck on this planet. So do you guys expect them to just throw on the ring, these two to throw on the rings and, you know, hit the Ola?
It seems the most logical thing to do. Or, unless, again, this is the first time we've ever seen, the green planet, right? This winter planet that they've been on, right?
Well, then,
for whatever reason, they could have always stashed some, like, you know, freaking aircrafts there. I mean, it's been,
that's true.
Their location to go just in case of emergency. So what would be the most thing to be, you know, to have on a planet in case of emergency?
And there is
a base.
I knew where it was, though, so it's probably just a beer fridge and some Playboys.
they have another Warriors on there.
And what else do you need to get off a planet instead of, you know, except for beer, fridge, and a Playboy, you know?
Well, here's the thing. We know that we've got this Aftermath series, or mini-series coming up afterwards, and we know that, you know, they've gotten over the weak little mind control angle. So what is this big, you know, big rift supposed to come from now, if it's not, you know, mind control?
There might be an issue at the end of it where the characters all kind of look at each other and realize that, like, you know, I mean, it's either going to be the Guardians tightening up or the Green Lanterns tossing the Guardians out, right? I mean,
we expected the Guardians to be gone in the last two story arcs.
So. That's true, because they've been building to it, I guess, right? But, the flash forward we saw in the future, so Gantt leading the Guardians imprisoning somebody, so, you know there's going to be some kind of upheaval. But you're right. What could possibly be the fallout? Maybe somebody will die. I mean, who knows? It's still possible they can kill Kyle. There's no reason.
There's an ad that says who will be the next Green Lantern of Sector 2814.
Well, nowhere. I mean, technically, Hal Jordan.
Really?
Hal Jordan doesn't have a second partner, guys. So.
Well, they did say they were going to take Hal Jordan. They did. They keep implying they're gonna. The big twist is that Hal Jordan is the problem. Hal Jordan is the problem, etc.
There's also the fact that there is technically only one Green Lantern of Sector 2814, and they're supposed to be second partners. So, you know, they can always just be throwing a curveball at you.
I think they're going to add a alien sector partner.
That'll be interesting. Or maybe they'll just add another human one just to screw with it.
That'll be going back a ways. I mean,
that was somebody fuck Kyle up.
We did talk about a character staying a Blue Lantern or staying the other color, you know, I mean, so that's very possible.
Yeah, I think Aladdin's going to be the new Green Lantern of Sector 2814.
Aladdin?
Alan Ladd, yes.
But Jeff Johns already thinks that Kyle Rayner is Aladdin.
Yeah, exactly.
So, refresh on Emerald Warriors 8.
Street Rat.
Say again?
We're all good with this issue?
Yeah, we got, like,
well, I hate the first half.
For Eric, he hates the recap, but the rest of it's strong.
It was good. It wasn't really worth an entire issue for a fight that had no real consequence. The fight was good, but that was whatever he was looking forward to.
Again, they've been leading up to this fight for a while now, and it didn't disappoint as much.
It looked pretty. At least they
stayed true to the cover.
Yeah,
they fought. They did fight.
It looked pretty.
You know, there wasn't a mention of, you know, Firestorm versus Deadman on it.
Yeah, it'd be great if the Firestorm Deadman fight happened in this, but for some reason.
Yeah, well, like, Firestorm apparently likes to go into issues announcing he's going to fight people and then doesn't like to do it. That's his track record at this point.
Well, again, the issue itself was good. We're eagerly waiting for part 4 and 5 when they both simultaneously come out.
And, is that it? Is it six parts?
I think it's through the summer. I think I believe so. I could be wrong.
Is it 9 parts?
It might be. I think it is 9 parts, because it's got to get to June. June is when the Aftermath starts, so.
Right.
They could just start the Aftermath before the series is over. They've done that before, right?
They have.
They have. 1 year later started before.
Unfortunately.
Is that a show?
That's it, fellas.
They did the Green Lantern game demo. They did reviews of that, but we haven't played it. I don't know if that makes anybody.
Yeah.
It's not worth talking about.
Not really worth talking about.
You can talk about the content update if you want.
I guess you can. Eric, as our resident correspondent for the DCU Online.
Eric, as our resident correspondent, what's going on in the DCU Online universe?
A bunch of nerds are nerding it up as much as they can, and as gay as they possibly know. Gayness is awesome. Did we record last week where I said every time I enter a group, I have to tell them I'm gay before they say anything, so they know that 90% of the things they say will either offend me or not insult me? But, Anyway, yeah, so they did an update this week. They added a specialty mission, a Green Lantern mission, which is basically just they took the first Green Lantern mission they had and they beefed it up. Everybody's a little tougher. Arkillo and Kilowog are now 4 or 5 stories tall for some reason. And, they've added a unique item to find, and it is Alan Scott's boots. So, in case you, want to have Alan Scott's feet.
Yeah, in case you want those red boots with the yellow stripe, you know, interlacing things
she's
over
those,
the skin.
Apple bottom boots.
Apple bottom.
It's apple bottom. It's boots with the fur.
Boots with the fur. Yeah. So you want to get those boots with the fur. Play DC Online. I'm trying to think of something else, but that's about it. They got Swamp Thing content coming up next month.
Man Thing, that's awesome.
Man Swamp.
Get kicked out of everywhere. Talk about my Man Thing. Yep. Man Thing.
Ah, Man Thing. Is it easy going around, like, you know, not saying stuff, you know, shuffling around?
You said that Marvel is putting out a special called Venom Flashpoint.
I just read that. I'm reading it now. I'm like, motherfuckers.
That was when they did Identity Disc when Identity Crisis came out, and they did something final when all the Crises came out. They're really funny, Marvel. Marvel's the best. They're so cute over there.
They're so cute. Marvel's the best.
They're so cute over there.
They're so adorable, Marvel.
Their new event for the summer, Fear Itself, the first issue came out. It was actually not bad, but it just reads like any other comic book storyline, you know? That's my thing with event comics, right? Like, you read those JLA Grant Morrison issues, and what's different between those and any other event comic, you know, that they don't have tie-ins that go on forever? I mean, like, shouldn't every Batman storyline be an event comic? Why do we have to wait till the summer to find out, you know, who's gonna die in Batman? Whatever. Anyway. Yada yada. But, it was good. It was good.
A little FYI.
Yeah, don't put that in the show, I guess, but Marvel's doing better. No big surprise, you know.
Wrap it up then.
I guess.
Helen
Mirren is
playing Kyle Rayner in the sequel. That's...
What?
No, he's not. He wants him to, though.
Helen Mirren.
Scott Winger is going to be playing Kyle Rayner in the next animated movie.
Is that true?
No.
Who?
He's the guy. He's the guy who played Aladdin. Is the joke I was making.
Oh, nobody understands.
Yeah,
I'm Scott Winger.
That was.
No one got the reference.
It was a.
Man, I've lived in two apartments since I made those Aladdin Kyle Rayner jokes. All right, so when are you get?
I was building on your joke. God,
street rat. God.
and that's a wrap, people.
Doesn't make me feel any better unless I can make you feel worse, just so you know.
That's a wrap!
Well, thanks everybody for listening, on the podcast. I hope you'll stay tuned for, next week.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening and check us out next time. And please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Don't forget to check out Kirby Crackle, the performance of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at kirbycracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, the performance of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/Roy Clark Method.
This magic reed—it is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, "How? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong, and don't make us wait."
If we want to be, oh my god, is that a booger? Oh.
What?
Oh god.
I stand by what I said before.
Blood everywhere.
The only person who has friends on this cast.
What just happened?
I just tasted something really last day. I didn't know what it was. What was I going to say?
Hey, ladies, he's single, believe it or not.
Taken out of context, that was fantastic.
Just in the middle of a sentence. Yeah.